quick, I'll give you a quick verbal introduction. So Caterina has received her PhD from the Scuola Normale Superiore in Pisa, Italy in 2014, and then moved to Chicago for a postdoctoral fellowship on the CMS experiment at the Fermi National Accelerator Laboratory. She joined SLAC in 2018 as a Panofsky Fellow and moved to the Atlas experiment. And then in 2022, she became assistant professor. Throughout this time, she has been devoted to studying the Higgs boson using data from the LHC. She's responsible for the integration activities at SLAC of the new Atlas Pixel Inner Tracker Detector. She was also co-convener of the group on Higgs boson properties in the US National Study for the Future of Particle Physics, and currently co-leads the development of the Cool Copper Collider, or as you may know it, C-cubed, which is a next generation linear collider concept. So with that, once again, Katerina, welcome, and please, over to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the introduction and for having me here today. So the title of my talk we have discussed a little bit with the organizer is like our possible steps towards a sustainable design of future colliders. So it's mostly like my perspective onto coming into the planning of future colliders a few years ago and how sustainability can play a key role, not just for reducing environmental impact, but also enabling new technology that can be more efficient as well in terms of cost of resources needed. So as Anna said, my angle is very focused on the Higgs bosons. So first, I want to also get started introducing a little bit the context of our quest for our future collider. So at the moment, we have one. Is it a CERN? We have the Large Hadron Collider. Probably most people that are in this call are familiar with it. We have two main experiments, CMS and Atlas, that are analyzing the data of LHC, which is performing very well. We just restarted taking data in 2025. 2024 was an all-time record for delivered luminosity. And we have large data sets now where we can trying to investigate the properties of this particle, the Higgs, that was discovered in 2012, with a data set that is a factor 30 more than we had at the time of the initial discovery. So indeed, it was a major milestone in particle physics in 2012, when the Higgs boson was discovered simultaneously by both the CMS and Atlas collaborations. And now it is officially part of the PDD. We have measured its mass. It's the only fundamental scalar that we have discovered so far. And we are increasing the precision of our understanding of how it interacts with the other standard model particle. So the last 10 years have been probably a success. But also in the lack of new discoveries of additional particles that can help us understanding what's missing in the standard model, the Higgs boson has played a central role in our planning for the future of collider physics. So even though over the last decade, LHC has fundamentally changed the landscape of energy physics with the discovery of this particle, there are a lot of questions in the standard model that are still pending. And one, for instance, is if the Higgs boson is the only fundamental particle that it's exists, if it's the only scalar field, and we know that it might not be because on many models of inflations, you expect an additional scalars as well that might have a role in the evolution of the universe. So looking for exotic Higgs decays, invisible Higgs decays, or shift in the total width can actually give us insight a little bit about what could be beyond the standard model that it's connected with the Higgs sector. And if there are new particles, it's a legitimate assumption to think that it might coupled with the Higgs boson, and Higgs boson potential itself can receive modification. So there are a lot of reasons to believe that if new physics exists, can be connected with the Higgs physics, and that's why it's really motivating us to really enabling the precisions of how we know well this particle and its interaction with the other particles in the standard model. And the only way to study the Higgs boson is a colliders, and that's why we are in our journey for increasing our precisions of most of the measurements at the Higgs sector. So the Large Hadron Collider is a PP machine, and at this point we cannot go high in energy. So what has been planned is to go higher in luminosity, which means collecting a data set would be like even a factor 10 larger than what we have collected so far in the high luminosity at OLHC. Of course, there are challenges associated to it because we would be running in a more dense environment in terms of proton-proton collisions that will require upgrade of our detectors. And that's how where our community is being busy right now, preparing the upgrade of the cameras so we can utilize the same ring at increased luminosity to collect a larger data set. So that is the plan that will land close to 2040s. When we will have about 3,000 inverse femtoborn, which is factor 10 rush, 10-ish larger than what we will have by the end of entry. And we will be able to measure the coupling of the Higgs boson, so to increase the precision. So probably many of you have seen this plot multiple times. This is our best guess for how well LHC will measure most of the couplings of the Higgs bosons. So on the y-axis, you have the strength of the coupling, sensitivity. This is a projected sensitivity, making some fair assumption about the systematic uncertainty we will have at LHC as a function of the particle mass. So the lightest are first, and then we go towards, at the end, to the top. So not all the interactions of the Higgs with all the particles will be accessible still at LHC. Some of the measurements would be better than 5%. Some others will have larger uncertainty, like that gamma charm as well. We'll have X charm coupling will have projected sensitivity about, it's not even in the plot here, but well beyond 20%. And around 30, 40% of the self-coupling, looking at the latest projection from high luminosity. So this seems to be all we can do. Which is an incredible improvement with respect to the current sensitivity. But reducing the uncertainty, like if you see the bottom panel, it's the uncertainty, you can really see the projected uncertainty to the standard model value that we expect to measure. So within those uncertainty, it's where new physics can hide, because if there is a deviation, it could be a level of percent to sub percent, you need to increase the precision of your measurement in order to be able with extreme confidence to claim that you have a deviation from the standard model. So the whole game here is an absence of new particles is to look at the precision measurement of the Higgs boson to try to identifying possible patterns of new physics that can give hints of new dynamics beyond the standard model. And there is a bunch of measurements that are inaccessible at LHC. For instance, all the physics of testing the Higgs interactions with the charm, strange quarks, all the light you cover, is pretty much inaccessible at LHC and high lumi. And that's why people have been starting talking for the last 20 years about going into a different regime, changing collisions particles from protons to electron and positrons. So now, and I will have a few explanations later about how that works. For the time being, let me just pause and show you a possible roadmap now that, you know, we
are... This is clear discrimination. Racist. Oh my God.
So we have a high luminosity plan for 2040s, and what the field is converging is to plan for an X factory, a so-called X factory, which is an E plus C minus collider that will produce a lot of Higgses and will enable us to increase the precision of most coupling measurements, while in parallel proceeding with R&D for possible technologies, PP, but also plasma wake field, the muon collider that can take us to very high energy in a cost-effective way after that. So this is the roadmap that P5, which is the US process for planning for high energy physics, has concluded 2 years ago, where we will be able to extend beyond 2040 from the precisions of the coupling to really reach the percent sub-percent precisions that we need to disentangle new physics effect. And hopefully learn a little bit about the scale of new physics so that we can target the center of mass of energy for the next collider in a more mindful way. In all this, has been identified that one of the projects that is most advanced in order to reach that those physics goals is FCC, which is planned to start 2047 if approved, and the European strategy process is ongoing, where the feasibility study report has been just published. So hopefully by the end of this year or next, we should be able to translate these projected roadmaps into something that is looking more like a plan. So the reason why we're interested into changing paradigma from PP to E plus D minus, it's because, as I showed you in a picture before, once we collide protons, it's all packets of protons, and only once in thousands of collisions, thousands of interactions, you actually have a strong interactions, and once in a billion collisions, you actually make a Higgs boson. So, and once you have produced a Higgs boson, it decays very much promptly. So you are not looking at a Higgs, you're looking at its decay products. So in a dense environment where you have multiple proton-proton collisions happening at the same time at each branch crossing, disentangling, reconstructing well the Higgs kinematic is not a small feat. So we have learned how to do that very well with machine learning over the years and incredible sophisticated algorithms. But there are certain channels like Yukawa couplings that are mostly inaccessible at LHC, exactly for the nature of the composite nature of the protons in those collisions. In E plus D minus, you have already fundamental particles. Once in 100 collisions, you produce a Higgs boson. And now the particles that you see in the final state are only coming from the Higgs decay. So you can really have a very clean experimental environment where you can enable very high precision measurement of all the Higgs boson properties and unlock some of the channels that were almost impossible, still impossible at HC. And another thing is interesting is that besides the Higgs, now you're in an environment in E plus D minus where you can record all the collisions you have. So you're in a triggerless scenario. You could be, or very much more easier than LHC in order to store most of the collisions that are being produced. And if there is new physics that has gone undetected at LHC for some trigger biases and so on, we'll probably have a better chance to be discovered at future E plus D minus. So when it comes to E plus D minus collider, people are talking about different center mass of energy. And the reason why it's now it becomes an important parameter, it's because at E plus D minus, you produce Higgs bosons through different mechanism depending on the center mass of energy that you have at your disposal. So while LHC, we have basically, yes, transitioned from 7 to 8, 13, now to almost 14 TeV. But all the production mechanism of the Higgs were all accessible at the same time. The overall cross-section, of course, increases with energy, but all the production modes were always accessible. And E plus D minus instead, depending on how much energy you can invest, you have different production mechanisms that are open. So at 250 GeV, which is the standard energy people are considering for an Higgs factory, you mostly produce Higgs through associated production with a Z boson. And this is a super interesting channel because now you can completely use the Z, reconstruct the Z, and go in an independent way, looking at the Higgs and measure the weight in a very agnostic way with very a little model dependence, and really have a super powerful probe for exotic and invisible decays of the Higgs. Then if you can afford to go high in energy, you can open up new channels like X production through W fusion and through interaction with TT bar pairs. So you can study the top coupling again. And double X production, which is an interesting channel for the self coupling, where HCA is doing projected to do well with large statistic, but not necessarily we're going to have a precision below 30% based on the current projection. So all the machines have been like, you know, studied based on simulation, projected sensitivity, all the possible X factor being considered. I'm showing here this crowded plot only to make one point. If you look at the gray bar, that's LHC, and the x-axis are all the possible couplings of the Higgs to the values of the model particles. And there is an important trend here. Most of the times, the gray bar is much larger than any of the other machines. So just to say that the performance, the physics reach of all these machines has been evaluated considering various scenarios for luminosities and thermal mass energy. And in all the cases, you will improve significantly over high luminosity performance, so unlocking the precisions that scientists are seeking for the next future collider. So just want to spend a word here. So I'm planning for the next facility. As I said, FCC seems to be the front runner, but the European strategy has also allowed us to ask us to evaluate alternatives that are still being considered. And for the sake of the planning for future colliders, I'm going to be comprehensive and cover a little bit of everything the community has been discussed over the last few years in order to evaluate proposals. So I need to start by explaining the difference a little bit between linear and circular. As I said, in terms of physics reach, they're all advancing with respect to high luminosity. But there are some key differences. If you're considering any plus or minus machine that is colliding your electrons and positrons head on or in a circular ring. So in a linear machine, you can polarize the beams, and that's an advantage on maximizing cross-section and minimize backgrounds. And because of the nature of the linear, you have less radiation that is lost at each bunch crossing, and you can reach high energy as a result. So you can go up to TeV with a linear collider just by extending the footprint of your machine. When it comes to circular collider now, you have to worry about synchrotron radiation, but you can reach about a very high luminosity. Because of synchrotron radiation, you have to limit the central mass of energy to something around 350 GeV, but you can have very high luminosity by having the beams are circulating in your ring. And the kind of size people are talking around this time, it's around 90 kilometers. So there are various proposals that have been evaluated by SNOMAS and proposals at the European strategy. You have the ILC, which is a linear collider concept planned to be located in Japan for a first upgrade to 50 GeV and then up to 500 GeV. And then CPC and FCC are both two rings of about 1900 kilometers that will deliver a center of mass of collision at center of mass of energy up to 40, up to 365. CLIQ had been proposed to actually go very high energy, up to 3 TeV, with a starting point at 380 GeV for X physics. And then the Cool-Copper Collider is something that emerged during SNOMAS as an alternative technology for a linear collider in the case that the ILC would not go forward. That would start at 250 GeV and then going, there is opportunity to go up to TeV. So I'm giving you the historical approach. I will have two words at the end about where we are now. And the reason is because I want to show you how sustainability can enter into the design and be the unlocking potential new R&D direction. So during SNOMAS, these were the proposals that were evaluated in terms of physics, but the feasibility of those were actually evaluated independently by the so-called Implementation Task Force, committee that was an independent group of scientists and experts that had evaluated all the various proposals in terms of power consumption, complexity, and readiness. The report is available on the archive and is super comprehensive, has several tables and several key parameters. Really, they developed a framework to evaluate as much as possible on equal footprint all the proposed accelerators, not just X factories, but the list goes on, also the very advanced accelerator concept that have the promise to reach very high energy. So here I just, cherry picked some extracted some information out of this report. So on the left, there is a plot that shows as a function of center of mass of energy, the ratio of luminosity per power of various accelerator concept. So when you're thinking of sustainability, you wanna have the highest luminosity for smaller power. So you wanna give as less energy possible in order to have the most efficient machine that delivers your data. And then you can see the trade-off between linear collider and circular collider very well. Low energy, the best ratio is coming from circular mass machine. As you go high in energy linear collider, it's where you can deliver more efficient, higher data set with less power. Of course, there are trade-offs in terms of footprint, which was one of the parameters assessed by this task force, power consumption, but also complexity and radiation mitigation in the case of very high energy machine that start becoming a concern. Another key factor for that can make a key difference whether or not you can build or not your collider is the cost. So they had their own way to derive cost estimate based on the framework they derived and information they had available at that time. So they produced some figure married to estimate basically labor that you would need in terms of FTE per year to deliver the material and assembly that needed for these future facilities, as well as very high range uncertainty cost estimate. So something was missing was, of course, a framework for sustainability at that time. But ILC and CLIC had done independently a lot of studies to evaluate the impact of construction. So a firm was hired, AROP, that did an analysis in order to identify the key contributors to global warming projected impact in terms of construction. And they had a whole framework that I will to evaluate the life cycle assessment of the various contribution to constructions, and not just material, but also transportations and so on. So we have basically then started looking into how all these facility compare in terms of main tunnel, but also operations later. So here, just a description of FCC, CPC, which is ILC and CLIC in terms of the parameters collected by the various proponents of these collaborations in terms of how much the main tunnel contributes to overall construction. Plus you have infrastructure due to various parts of accelerator concepts, as well as the cavern where the experimental holes are located, plus A4 and A5 basically correspond to an additional 20% of the overall impact of construction, and it's due to the transportations and of materials to from the site. These are very extensive analysis that dedicated experts have put together for CLIC and ILC. And I, in the feasibility studies for FCC that was just published, there is also an update about FCC as well. So these are numbers from a previous publications that reflect what was known at that time by 2022 and 2023. And you will hear more probably also in Ken Bloom talk tomorrow about how this has been put together and these have been evaluated by the various collaborations of future colliders. So this is just a little bit more details about the life cycle assessment, about how the various the various contribution to construction, not just the raw material and the manufacturer itself, but also the transportations and the construction process are taken into account, and they are non-negligible. They make up more than 20% of the overall impact on construction that is being reported. So one thing to mitigate construction is to come up with a better engineering design of the allocated real estate in your tunnel and how you can make it as compact as possible. There are some intrinsic limitations if you have to put your klystron in the tunnel and allow for cryogenics and so on. And so there is a minimum size that cannot be violated, but all the collaborations, CLIQ, ILC, and FCC have put a lot of effort in order to minimize the overall diameter of the tunnel. So the latest from FCC is 5.5 meters. ILC has started from 9.5, and now they're looking into possible designs where that number can actually be reduced to 5.6 meters. And then CLIQ has two designs, one which is more compact, as low as 5.6, and one which is actually including a klystron in the main tunnel, which is roughly 10 meters diameter. So another way to reduce impact of construction is to look at surface site. So of course, this is only possible if you're looking at a Hello? Okay.
Apologies.
Small footprint. This is something that in the context of C-Cube, we have been investigating about how having a cut and cover in sight could actually reduce by a lot the impact of construction and allow for a compact design, but also reduce the amount of dirt that you have to remove from the site, because then you can just cover it back once you allow for your prefabricated slots to be put in place. So another big component of emissions due to collider is of course operations. So the site power requirements, of course, depending on the optimization you can do your beam parameters, circular linear have different parameters to play with in order to reduce that. The carbon intensity is something that really depends where in the world you are, as it was also mentioned in the previous talk. If you're in China, of course, you're looking at a factor 10 more emissions than if you're looking at the same collider being operated in Europe. So in the process of looking at that, at these scenarios, so TRUSNOMAS, so we actually learn, you know, about certain valid assumption one can make, since the United States has set a goal to be completely green by 2035. And this is at least true in California, where now things you can use most of renewables through the day, and you can leverage the grid with batteries to better use the excess of energy that you might get from solar or wind farms. So what we assumed in the analysis we had done at that time, evaluating C-Cube in the context of the other future colliders, was to assume that all the facility would be able to get to the same target value of 20 grams CO2 emissions per kilowatt hour. So that was an indicator assumption that basically assumed that whether you are in the world, by the time this next collider would be built, we can all get to this really like, not realistic, but at least wishful target of low emission. So and this takes me to the example. So when we started looking into C-Cube at that time, we wanted to take into account considerations about sustainability early on in the design. For those that are not familiar with what C-Cube is an 8-kilometer footprint collider proposal for reaching central mass of energy collision in epoxy minus to at 250 and 550 GeV. The small footprint is possible to a higher gradient that is possible with leaders and developments in normal conductive technology. So you can reach a 70 to 120 MeV per meter gradient that can allow you to be comfortably in a 8-kilometer accelerator complex to basically achieve central mass energy collisions needed to study the Higgs and the liver, the whole physics program. So the only technology is different with respect to ILC and CLIC is basically only the technology that goes into the main LINAC that accelerate the particles. But everything when it comes to beam delivery and interaction point, damping rings, was basically re-optimized by the baselines of CLIC and ILC. And we, as I said, we already looked into cut and cover for the tunnel for cost reduction and sustainability in terms of overall emissions that you can reduce by a lot per meter by using a cut and cover approach as opposed to a boring machine. I did not complete this. This was supposed to be a transition. But anyway, what I wanted to say is that we started looking into, when we did our analysis of overall emission, we realized that in C-Cube, given the small footprint, then it becomes operations, one of the lead contributions to the overall emissions for this collider. So we started looking into the components that are like consuming the most power. So the overall consumptions that we expect at 250 GV is order of 100 megawatt for the main LINAC alone. And then we started looking into the efficiency of the klystrons, pulse compressions can actually also, if demonstrated, could actually lead to also significant power consumption. And also how to play with the beam parameters. And that's like the drawings at the bottom of the slide. So basically we realized that we could reduce the frequency of the bunch trains from 120 hertz to 60 hertz. And now double the bunches for each train. And in this way, we can still deliver the physics we wanted. We verified that with beam background simulations and so on. But now we have double the flat top, half the bunch spacing, and by staying at constant luminosity, we can reduce the power significantly by more than 40%. So we decided then to, given the fact that looking at all the various components that were leading contributions to the power consumption, we identified possible R&D lines that could help us deliver in the same physics, but keeping power consumption lower. Since then we have totally verified this approach and assume that as a baseline. So this is one example where having considerations in mind about sustainability early on in the design and planning for the collider can actually lead to optimization of not just the civil construction from the get-go, but also on the beam parameters from the get-go.
Apologies, Katharina, we're running out of time.
Okay, sorry, I'm ready to wrap up. Do I have a minute?
Yeah, of course, a minute's fine, yep.
Okay, and this is the comparison we did at that time. Of course, this will be updated with all the inputs from the European strategy. I want to conclude by saying that there is recognition in the European strategy process of how important it is to have an insight on sustainability. So there is a dedicated working group that is led by Katharina Blois and Maxim Titov that has been tasked from the CERN Council to really evaluate a framework, develop guidelines and a framework to evaluate the sustainability impact of future accelerator. Ensuring broad community representation is also one of the mandates of this committee. So there are links here, and this is a slides from Katharina and Maxim about the various guidelines for the sustainability assessment. And even another example I want to highlight is there is a newly formed 10TB plasma weak field studies. And within that, there is a dedicated working group that is co-led by me and Marlene Turner about how to include sustainability into the design. Of course, new technology have the promise to deliver you more luminosity for less power. That's why we're investigating new technology for future accelerators. But also there are a lot of other considerations have to be made into planning for the future facility that have to be taken into account early on in the design. And I'm leaving you with these conclusions. And I'm sorry for having run out of time. I hadn't realized, but thank you for your attention.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. That was really interesting and a really great overview of the potential path that we have and sustainability options and also the fact that we can really start looking into it early on in the design process of a facility. I'm really sorry, but we don't have time for questions. But I do encourage everyone to either put the questions in the chat or on the Mattermost, and we can do that offline. But for now, if that's okay, Katerina, we'll move on to the next talk. Thank you once again. I encourage everyone to show their appreciation through a virtual round of applause. Thank you. So next, we have Professor Yamina Saheb. Yamina, would you mind starting to share your slides? Welcome, and we're glad to have you join us. I am going to. Can you hear me?
Good afternoon or good evening, everyone. I'm sorry you cannot see me because I have an issue with my camera. So it looks like it's on on mode, but no one can see me. So I will share my slides.
Wonderful, yes. I can give you a very brief introduction if you'd like.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, Yamina is a lecturer and a researcher at Sciences Po in Paris, a co-founder of the World Sufficiency Lab, a lead author of the IPCC AR6 on climate change mitigation, and a senior fellow at the OpenXP and a guest researcher at the University of Lausanne. Prior to this position, Yamina was a senior fellow researcher at the University of Münster and previously a senior researcher at the University of Lausanne. And in 2018, Yamina was the head of the Energy Efficiency Unit at the Energy Charter Secretariat. Before that, she was a policy and scientific officer at the Renewables and Energy Efficiency Unit at the Institute of Energy and Transport of the Joint Research Centre, JRC, of the European Commission. And she's also worked as a senior buildings energy policy analyst in the International Energy Agency. She also holds a PhD in energy engineering, master's degrees on landscape architecture, and development economics, and an engineering degree in building technologies. And with that, thank you so much again for joining us. I'd love to let you take it away. Would you like a reminder of timing? We realize.